Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about California wildfires, Fort Peck's new tribal government, and hunting deer to help control chronic wasting disease in Libby. It's Wednesday, October 30th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Yellowstone National Park announced yesterday a handful of big plans this week to chip away at its nearly $600 million maintenance backlog. Rachel Kramer reports.
Yellowstone will spend more than $75 million on three road projects to improve safety and access. One of the projects will close the road between Tower Fall and Chittenden Road until April 2022. According to the press release, crews will widen the road, provide additional pullouts, and create a larger, safer parking lot at the Tower Fall General Store. The other two projects will cause delays, not full closures. The North Entrance Road will get an additional lane and kiosk to improve traffic flow and reduce lines. Construction is expected to take 2 years. On the East Entrance Road between Fishing Bridge and Indian Pond, crews will replace Pelican Creek Bridge with a viaduct to allow the wetland and creek to flow freely again. They'll also finish a project from 2018 to improve Fishing Bridge's deck and piers, improve the parking lot, widen the road, and add turn lanes. The project is expected to wrap up fall 2020. Most of Yellowstone's nearly $600 million maintenance needs are related to roads. Funding for the new projects comes from the Federal Highway Administration, Yellowstone Forever, the National Park Foundation, and fees collected in Yellowstone. The park has received over 4 million visitors each year since 2015. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Wildland firefighting is a team effort. California has helped Montana during wildfire crises, and Montana now is returning the favor. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
California's fires have consumed tens of thousands of acres and forced thousands to flee their homes. With their resources stretched thin and firefighters battling fatigue, incident commanders reached out for help Sunday. 9 western states, including Montana, responded.
Right now we've got approximately 65 people and 25 vehicles that are headed, as we speak, en route to California.
That's Montana Department of Military Affairs spokesman Captain Dan Bushnell. Military Affairs works hand-in-hand with the Montana Department of Emergency Services.
In my career, I've seen California support us more than 4 or 5 times. They've sent engines and personnel up here to help us during our fire season. So it's really a good neighborly thing to do. We're helping them. They've helped us in the past.
Staff from roughly 18 local fire agencies from across Montana will be gone for more than 2 weeks. That includes 14-day deployments with a total of 4 days travel. Lincoln Chute is Flathead County's fire services manager.
We really don't have a very large wildland potential at this point in time. When you got snow on the ground, you don't really feel like your wildland equipment is really critical to have right in your area.
Chute says several fire departments from Flathead County, including Big Fork, Marion, Whitefish, and Evergreen, have engines and staff heading west to California.
So by spreading them out, it really actually is a benefit, I believe, because what you end up doing is you're giving experience and knowledge and skills that you typically would not have on these bigger incident types that they can bring back. And on a really bad day in Montana, you know, you have some people that have another experience level.
Helena Fire's Assistant Chief Mike Chambers says 6 local firefighters and 2 trucks deployed for California Tuesday. That's a first for his team.
We really haven't had the staffing and the training, you know, many, many years back. But since Helena sits within the wildland-urban interface and we do have wildland incidents, we've really been ramping up our wildland training and expertise and whatnot over the last number of years. And this year, we want to be involved. Our city manager is from California. She very much understands the issues that occur down there. And we're just happy to be on board to be able to have our crews highly trained and ready to go.
2 engines and 6 firefighters from Columbus, about 40 miles west of Billings, are joining the fight in California. Fire Chief Rich Cowger.
When a state, especially like California, who has a very robust mutual aid system, they have a very robust fire system as a whole. When they're reaching out for help, you know it's a bad day for them.
Kauger says the aid coming in from the nine states responding to California's plea for help will hopefully give the Golden State's first responders a chance to catch up.
Because even though everything is going on with the big fires, they still have normal operations to contend to. Those local fire departments still have their day-to-day EMS calls, car accidents, structure fires, those kind of things to handle. Plus, now these catastrophic wildland fires on top of that. So in the fire service, people don't typically reach out for help unless they really need it. They're asking for help, so yeah, we've got it.
Forecasters say all the elements are in place Tuesday evening for a powerful new round of Southern California's notorious Santa Ana winds. The National Weather Service predicts what it's calling a, quote, remarkable and dangerous event, end quote, with 60 to 70 mile per hour gusts in the mountains and some valleys. Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
Federal public health investigators that study risks at Superfund sites are coming back to Anaconda this week to discuss the results of a study examining locals' exposure to lead and arsenic. Health officials are expected to report those exposure levels are normal. Montana Public Radio's Nora Sachs has more.
Some residents in Anaconda are worried that despite the ongoing Superfund cleanup of historic smelter pollution there, they're still being exposed to metals in their environment. In late 2018, in response to the community's concern, the Federal Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry agreed to do what they call an exposure investigation. Specialists collected blood and urine samples from 367 residents and tested them for lead and arsenic. Now, they're ready to share the results of their study. David Dorian is a health assessor with ATSDR.
Our main finding was that blood lead levels and urine arsenic levels in the residents that we tested were comparable to the general U.S. population.
But it's more complicated than that. So this week, ATSDR staff are returning to the Smelter City to discuss the specifics of their investigation at a public meeting. Dorian says,
there's more detail that's involved about how we arrive at that conclusion and specifics about how these individual contaminants compare and what kind of recommendations we're making so that the community can continue to reduce lead and arsenic values.
The ATSDR meeting is on Wednesday night at 6 p.m. at the Anaconda High School Auditorium. For more details and to read ATSDR's full report, check out our website, mtpr.org. I'm Nora Sachs, Montana Public Radio.
The Fort Peck tribes swore in a new tribal government Monday. As Olivia Reingold reports, tribal members elected five newcomers to tribal council while upholding the current chairman.
Members of the Assiniboine and Sioux tribes re-elected Chairman Floyd Azure this weekend to his third consecutive term. He won with a more than 10% margin of victory on a platform of education.
We're not moving this country forward unless we get our people educated.
One thing getting in the way? He says teachers don't have enough leeway to discipline their students.
Now all they do is put you in timeout. What the heck is timeout?
He says there wouldn't be such a respect problem in schools if teachers could discipline their students more, including physical punishments. He says the respect issue is a societal problem, but there are things the tribes can do, like send students to truancy court. It's a program he says he started as chairman.
As long as I'm chairman, we're going to do that. We got to get those kids to school. We have to get them educated.
He says the program is funded throughout his two-year term as chairman. There are five public schools on the reservation, plus a Head Start program and a community college. Azure joins a tribal council with five new members, one new associate judge, and 13 incumbents. New tribal council member Alexander Smith is the youngest elected official in recent history at the age of 24. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
A documentary about a community's fight to stop a gold mine north of Yellowstone National Park will premiere Saturday at the prestigious Banff Mountain Film Competition in Canada. Rachel Kramer spoke with the award-winning filmmaker based in Clyde Park, north of Livingston.
Eric Peterson says getting into the Banff competition is one of the goals he sets for himself each time he makes a documentary. His newest, Paradise, will be his third film to make the cut.
I'm just excited to have it in front of such a big audience. That's kind of the goal with these outdoor adventure documentaries, is you put so much work and time into them that it's fun to be rewarded with an audience of that size and that stature.
Peterson's 20-minute film focuses on a diverse group of local business owners, conservationists, and recreationists who unify against exploratory drilling in Immigrant Gulch to protect their quality of life and the tourism economy in Paradise Valley. The film shows breathtaking views of snowy peaks and the Yellowstone River that winds through the valley, as well as little scenes of daily life, making pancakes, waxing skis,
helps the ski slide,
feeding chickens, from the people who call this place home. Brian Wells is a conservative small business owner featured in this clip from Paradise.
I hope my grandkids grow up and love this place. I hope they understand that their grandpa fought for this place.
Peterson says Wells played a big role in bringing all the different groups together.
He was kind of the bridge to bring the environmental groups and the conservation groups and the business owners and the landowners and the ranchers of Paradise Valley. I think he helped unify all those groups.
Peterson says Wells will help introduce the film in Banff on Saturday. Public screenings of Paradise and panel discussions are tentatively planned for early January in Bozeman, Livingston, and Red Lodge. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
A Montana group pushing to legalize recreational marijuana by a citizen vote next year now has support and financial backing from two national groups. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports the campaign to set up a tax structure and regulations for recreational use plans to spend millions in Big Sky Country.
The National Political Action Committee that successfully pushed for the legalization of marijuana in California, Maine, and Massachusetts is coming to Montana. Montana Marijuana Advocacy Group Coalition 406 announced this week it's partnering with the D.C.-based New Approach PAC in its effort to legalize, regulate, and tax adult use of marijuana in the state. The National Marijuana Policy Project is also supporting the change in Montana.
I have every faith that these are going to pass.
Pepper Peterson is the political director of Coalition 406, which is moving forward under the name New Approach Montana.
You know, there seems to be an inevitability coming from the federal government, so let's do something in Montana that we own rather than something that D.C. hands us.
According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, 11 states and the District of Columbia have legalized small amounts of marijuana for adult recreational use. More than double that have decriminalized small amounts of the drug. The Coalition 406 group and their backers are trying to add Montana to the legalized states with two ballot issues, which they hope to put in front of voters in 2020. First, the Marijuana Regulation Act calls for legalizing, taxing, and regulating the drug. The second part of the potential ballot package is an amendment to the state constitution. Montana's constitution says a person is an adult at age 18, so to regulate which adults can use the drug needs a narrowly tailored constitutional change.
We only want 21 and over to have access to marijuana.
Peterson says his group's polling shows wide support among Montanans for regulated recreational marijuana for those 21 and older. But the state legislature has not been as welcome to the idea. In the 2019 legislative session, lawmakers voted down a bill to legalize and tax the drug. A resolution to study the potential impacts of recreational weed in the state also failed to pass. Republican Senator Matt Regeer chaired the Judiciary Committee that rejected the study on a party-line vote. Here's Regeer right before the vote.
Montana has medical marijuana, and I'm just afraid that this will be seen as a first step towards legalization of marijuana. And that narrative is one that I don't want to set out there.
But Democratic Senator Diane Sands, who sponsored the study, says she wasn't trying to legalize weed. She says the state needs to be ready if Montana voters approve it.
I think with a highly funded national effort to expand recreational marijuana into Montana, it's highly likely it will pass.
That could force state lawmakers to debate the issue again, whether or not they want to. The text of what voters may see on a ballot proposal to legalize marijuana isn't finished. The group campaigning to remove the prohibition also still needs approval to start collecting signatures from around the state to qualify their issue for the ballot. Those signatures are due in June. Pepper Peterson, political director for the effort, says along with its new national partners, the group could spend more than $3 million to push for legal recreational marijuana in Montana. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Both deer and elk rifle hunting season opened across the state Saturday, and hunters hiked into the woods at the crack of dawn in hopes of coming out with some fresh meat to stock their freezers. The ritual was a little different this year for hunters in the Libby area, where chronic wasting disease has been detected in white-tailed deer. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton tagged along on a hunt inside the CWD management zone to see how things are changing.
Beau Albright and his girlfriend are getting ready for their second hunt of the day on Brush Mountain, southeast of Libby. With a fresh coating of snow on the ground and hunting tags for whitetails and elk in their pockets, they quietly hike along an old logging road until they come across some tracks.
Looks like elk.
They decide to follow them into the woods and eventually down a steep ravine. When the hillside gets too steep, Albright stops, slings his gun off his shoulder, and waits. After 20 or so minutes pass with no sign of any deer or elk, he gives a hand signal to head back to the truck. Albright lives in Kalispell, but he's been hunting in the Libby area for nearly 20 years. He's an active member of the Northern Rockies chapter of the Mule Deer Foundation.
So FWP first came across it this spring up here, released a press release. I think it's about how a lot of people found out about it.
Chronic wasting disease has been detected in deer and elk herds in portions of north and southeastern Montana, but no detections were made anywhere near Libby until this year. So it was a surprise when Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks announced the disease's presence this spring. So far, detections have only been made within the city limits of Libby. That gives hunters like Albright hope. If the disease spreads, it could decimate herd numbers.
We'll see what happens. If the deer in town just happen to live there year-round, it could be a good case for keeping it contained.
Albright came up empty-handed for the day, but hunters that successfully harvest a deer, elk, or moose within 10 miles of Libby are required to bring the head or lymph nodes of their animal to CWD check stations.
Where's the good old head at?
FWP Region 1 Wildlife Program Manager Neil Anderson and other department staff are taking those samples at a station along Highway 2 outside of town.
Which is good. We want a good representative sample from all around this area, and so they've been coming in from all directions.
FWP says just over 30 white-tailed deer came through Libby check stations for sampling over the weekend. The goal is to collect 200 hunter-harvested samples within the CWD management zone to understand the disease's prevalence. FWP hopes to trap the same number of animals in town later this winter.
And it'll give us a better idea what prevalence is, more or less right in town.
High deer densities are conducive to the spread of CWD through feces, urine, and deer-to-deer contact. Though deer can look reasonably healthy during the 2 years it can take for CWD to kill them. With 20 detections in Libby, it's possible the disease's prevalence in town could well exceed the 5% threshold that triggers the more aggressive responses in FWP's management plan. Most management tools in the plan call for reducing deer densities in order to meet that goal. It's a new approach many Western states are taking, because evidence shows the disease spreads exponentially faster once prevalence hits 20%. That's also when CWD begins to reduce herd numbers. Libby resident Al Randall says he's concerned about high abundances in the urban population and says he's seeing signs of CWD in town.
You know, when you see a sick deer, you know it's a sick deer, heads hanging. You know, they look terrible, no energy. So.
That and the detections in town drove many like Randall to hunt outside of the CWD management zone. But he and many others are coming to the station to take advantage of FWP's free CWD testing services. Even though there's no evidence that humans can contract CWD, officials advise getting animals in CWD-positive areas tested before consuming the meat. A number of hunters in Libby support how FWP is handling the detections, and locals like James Woody say the presence of the disease isn't going to change their hunting practices all that much.
Not really, no. My kid's first year hunting, we weren't going to pass that up. 10-year-old shot his first buck, wasn't going to skip it because it was, the wasting disease was around, so, yep. We're waiting on his results.
It takes 2 to 3 weeks for FWP to get CWD test results back to hunters. It'll be early next year before FWP gets an idea of the disease's prevalence in and around Libby. And that number will guide the agency's management actions into the future. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.